Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Boy, there's nothing like having a holiday and you get yourself a new car and you're going to deal with the best. Their sales staff is great, product unbelievably good, and the service department will take care of you the life of the vehicle. It's a dynamite combination. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil Coulong in just a few moments. Last night, the Chiefs were able to hold off the L.A. Chargers. Patrick Mahomes gets the job early through the air.
First down, Mahomes. McCoy in the backfield. They're going to throw it deep. Near side, Kelce. Caught a run. Caught it. Touchdown. Kansas City. And Mahomes right on the money and just drops the ball into the hands of Kelce. A 23-yard touchdown.
The outstanding Mitch Holfus on the Chiefs radio network in Mexico City last night where they're still replacing turf. But it's also the best home crowd the Chargers have had this year. What?
That's true. Actually, the first sky shot I saw the turf, it didn't look all that bad. But I guess but it was a far away shot from up top.
Yeah, it's like the movie Tootsie. I mean, when Dustin Hoffman is dressed in drag,
right?
And they said, pull back. How far? How about Cleveland? That's like, okay, great. Same thing.
Might have to play some Stephen Bishop on the show later.
Yeah, I think you may have to. Oh, my goodness. Wait, Bill Murray's in that movie? Jessica Lange? That is one crazy soap opera.
I just read this morning that Stephen Bishop is releasing some new material. He's still recording. Still recording, still performing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How about that?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how many years ago it's been, but it was not long after the Rusty Rail opened up in Mifflinburg, and you had a chance to go out there earlier this year.
Yes, I went there with my son-in-law's birthday. Yeah.
Stephen Bishop performed there. No, I'm sorry. It wasn't Stephen, but it was Stephen Forbert. I got my Stevens mixed up. Stephen Bishop and Stephen... Forbert.
I'm Stephen Jones.
And you're Stephen Jones, the third Steve. Yeah, Stephen Forbert had like an early 80s one-hit wonder called...
The third one? What are you talking about, third? What the heck does that mean?
Wow. Number one in this number three in this conversation, but number one in our hearts.
I'm joking.
I know you are. I know you are. No, Stephen Forbert had a one-hit wonder in the early 80s called Romeo's Tune. And I got him and Stephen, the other Stephen mixed up. Stephen Bishop mixed up.
Speaking of one-hit wonders, how's the suit doing?
Serves me right. I thought I had my Steven straight, but you still get top billing this show. So
I just want to point out that Rusty Rail's good, so it's fine.
Yeah,
yeah. If I'm going to go there, I'm going to go like the Penn's Tavern. Rusty Rail's good too. All right. There we go. So. Now let's bring in Neil Coulong from USA Today. We're going to talk about your beloved Steelers.
Yes, staying in division, heading to. Got to make sure the.
Did you notice what they did with the Cleveland game? They flexed it, but they flexed it to 1 o'clock.
Flexed it up.
You want to know why?
I would love to know why, because they moved Oakland and the Chiefs.
I do know why.
So it's got nothing to do with Oakland and the Chiefs.
It has everything to do with they don't want that game in prime time. They want that game to be at an innocuous time, the 1 o'clock time slot, to get it off any potential national TV thing.
So in case terrible happens again, it's not glaring in prime time.
Because of the publicity that happened from the first game, they want to take it and bury it.
Mm.
I'm telling you, that's now, do I know it for a fact? No, but that's my strong opinion. They flexed that game to 1 o'clock to bury it so it doesn't get more publicity.
Yeah, there have been a lot of Steelers-Browns games with a 1 o'clock kick over the years, so no complaints from me.
Well, good. That's... I'm sure there's somebody in the back office that's upset, but that's all right.
He probably doesn't have anything to... He probably doesn't have a problem with it either.
No. He has a problem with everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, he's a half empty kind of guy.
If the game's at 4:25, he's got a problem. If the game's at prime time, he's got a problem. The game's at 1 o'clock, he's got a problem. They shouldn't just play the game. All right. So. All right. Let's bring in Neil Coulong, USA Today. Neil, welcome. Great to have you with us. Miles, will get your take on Myles Garrett right out of the gate.
Wow. The crazy part of the game was well before a very crazy and memorable game as it was. It's easy to say. I was as shocked as anybody was, but the whole thing, I think, took on a life of its own a good 18 hours after it all happened. I think everybody right away saw something that really just kind of sobered them up to a pretty disgusting act. I mean, we don't see things like that on the field very often at all. I mean, I think I can think of one other time that we've seen a player get hit in the head, swung by somebody else, especially with their own helmet. But Right. Everything that came after that, just the bitterness from a lot of current and former players over how the suspension was measured out, the backlash that a lot of it received, it really just shows how divided people get on topics like this. Because in a vacuum, if you don't care who Mason Rudolph is, if you don't care who the Browns and Steelers are, there's no way that you could look at that incident and think that Rudolph deserves anything even close to a suspension. Now, that isn't to say that he's, blameless in the whole thing. All things considered, I think you have to fine him because you really can't, unacknowledge two people in a fight. You can't just point at one of them. He has a role in that. But the reality is, if Garrett doesn't swing that helmet, Garrett might have gotten a fine. No, I shouldn't even say that. There might have been a penalty. That's probably it.
Right.
So Rudolph is going to end up picking up a fine for the sake of appeasing the masses for really not much more than getting hit in the head with his own helmet.
Right.
So in the end here, the lesson is, chin strap safety is more important than you think that it is.
Yeah. So Rudolph gets fined. Pouncey gets 3. Indefinite for Garrett. Did the NFL get it right?
I think they did. I predicted almost exactly that.
I agree with you, by the way. The NFL did get it right. The only thing, maybe I would have given Pouncey 2 instead of 3, but that's just whatever.
Well, it's interesting because I said that as well. I thought 2 was the right number, but I think, and some have disagreed with me on this, I think you almost have to throw the Browns game out in that.
Yeah.
So if you count the Browns game, which he probably shouldn't play in for the sake of the greater good, it's only 2 weeks after that game. The NFL even moved it from a national game to a regional game, which back in the Bengals
days,
absolutely was going to be a national game.
That's right.
They're not going to let this be a big thing. So I think you have to take him out of that game. The NFL doesn't control the appeal. So if the appeal drops it down, if it's 2 and it drops it down to 1, then he's playing in that Browns game. So I think you have to make it 3 just to appeal proof it, so to speak.
Right, exactly.
That seems nefarious, but honestly, I think it's the right move. I think 3 is the right number. Appeal it down to 2.
Yes.
I'm not against that either.
Right.
But I don't think you can have him play in the Browns game, and he absolutely needs to be suspended for that. Justified or otherwise, he needs to be suspended for it.
In terms of the flow of the game Thursday night, and I'll be honest, I mean, because I was doing a basketball game at Georgetown at the same time, Neil, so I didn't see it, but the final score didn't look good. Does that reflect how the Steelers played?
I'd say this. I bet the Hoyas would have played a better game than the Steelers did in Cleveland that day. But overall, I think it did. I think Cleveland allowed Pittsburgh to stay in the game through the same kind of mentality that we saw at the end of the game. And that might be kind of a low shot against them, but they I think, took the defensive aggression above and beyond what should have been normal. I've said this for the most part of the year, but it was never more apparent than it was Thursday night. Cleveland is the worst coached defensive secondary in the NFL.
Yeah, no, that'd be a good point.
It's absolutely ridiculous in a lot of cases, the stuff that they were doing. And there was stuff in there the officials didn't call. Keep in mind, Juju Smith-Schuster suffered a concussion getting hit twice in the head on the
yes.
same play, and there wasn't a flag.
Right.
You know, so that doesn't even go into the score of everything they went wrong. Demaryius Randall's hit on Demaryius Johnson, Deontay Johnson, was insanely dirty. I for the life of me, I don't understand what he was so upset about.
Right.
There's no way he was going to avoid ejection for that. I'm not saying that they targeted them. I'm not saying that they went after them, but they play with such poor technique. None of these guys bent down to hit anybody in the chest area. They didn't go for the ball. They just ran into them head first. I mean, they're sloppy. And the touchdown the Steelers scored was at the tail end of a four-penalty drive on the Browns' defense. So in that regard, I think the score was probably about right. Pittsburgh's offense was bad enough in that game to not score. They really should not have scored.
Did the officials lose control of this game, or are they culpable for what we saw at the end?
I feel the officials did the right thing overall.
Okay, good.
They missed.
And again, I didn't see the game, so I'm not. That's why I'm asking the question, and I'm not making a statement about it.
And that's a good question. If you remember way back, the 2010 season, I think that's the last game we saw a Steelers opponent get thrown out. Richard Seymour attacked Ben Roethlisberger. That was probably the worst officiated game I've ever seen.
Right.
And the official lost control of that. There were fights after every snap.
Yeah.
It was that bad. This game was not like that. I thought the Browns played a very undisciplined brand of football, but that's Browns football under Todd Kitchens right now. So,
right.
Or Freddie Kitchens. They earned that performance. They earned the comments that were made about that, and they probably should have scored a lot more than they did. The defense didn't need to allow a touchdown.
Right.
I thought Cleveland offensively played a pretty solid game. I thought Pittsburgh defensively played a pretty solid game. The difference in the end, you take out all the other stuff, Mayfield managed the pocket much better, I think, than pretty much any other quarterback the Steelers faced this season. He did a great job. He had a lot of real high-level throws. The addition to Kareem Hunt was what I'd imagine they hoped to get, an excellent receiver out of the backfield. He made two great plays. Cleveland was a better team. You know, Pittsburgh is just dead offensively, and Cleveland had enough. They made enough big plays to coast comfortably for the most of that game.
Neil, you injected Kareem Hunt in there at running back, so now let's go to the Steelers running back situation. When James Conner is healthy, what does he actually mean to the domino effect of the offense?
Having an alpha player, whatever position that is, having a guy that is reliably going to win one-on-one matchups, it boosts everything else up, because then you're not relying on things that are less than 50%. And that is what we see with the Steelers offense today. They are simply not good enough to win more than 50% of their snaps throughout a game. They're just not. And they're not going to score. It's not a lack of effort. It's not a lack of play calling, although I think there are some issues with that. Perhaps they shouldn't, you know, wave the surrender flag as early as they seem to in a lot of these games. But a lot of these guys have barely played at the NFL level. You can't ask them to handle specialty packages.
Right.
There's just not much a lot of those guys can do. And you lost Juju before halftime.
Right.
You lost Deontay Johnson, who was the only other guy that's had more than 12 targets throughout a year before. There's nobody left offensively for them. Connor is among, if not the best offensive player they have when he's out there. He's a reliable ball carrier. The fumbling issue is something he needs to fix, but he can gain yards. He can make guys miss in the open field. He's a good pass catcher. He can make plays from the flats down to the hash of the seams. He's going to put guys in conflict when he's on the field. The Steelers have none of that. So it is not hard for a defense to play very basic, very simple stuff that's, communication mistake proof. With that, you're getting 100% of the defense every time you snap the ball. And that's what the Steelers are seeing. They don't have enough guys to break what a defense is trying to do. And with that, you're seeing really what you're getting in Pittsburgh right now.
Right.
This is the lowest the least amount of talent they've had at skill positions in I don't know how long, certainly as long as I've been covering them. They're bad. They don't have any difference makers out there.
Now, America, I will ask one of the truly great open-ended questions of our time. How bad are the Bengals? Well, that really answers it right there.
it's a fair and valid question. That's why. I think that in and of itself should be an answer. I'll say this. They're not the worst team I've ever seen. They're not even the worst Bengals team I've ever seen.
Right.
I would be worried Sunday if I was Pittsburgh. I really would. The Bengals are bad. I don't know how the Steelers right now, as we know them, the 2019 Week 12 Steelers, I don't know how much better they can claim that they're better than the Bengals.
Right.
Defensively, I think Pittsburgh's going to have a field day, but they can lose this game 6-3. They have no offense. Neither do the Bengals, fortunately for them. But Joe Mixon is a difference maker. He's a guy that can make plays in all three downs, in different phases of the game. The Steelers don't have a player like that on offense. So, you know, one missed tackle, one broken play, that might be the difference. I don't think it's going to be a particularly high-scoring game, and it's certainly as depleted a Steelers team as you're ever going to see. I'm not trying to make excuses for them,
sure.
But they got guys out there that don't belong in the league, let alone playing on Sunday. Cincinnati, when you lose as often as you do, eventually that new coach breaks through a little bit. That first-time coach.
Yeah, sure.
To be fair, I don't think we've seen a first-time head coach as woefully overwhelmed as poor Zach Taylor is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in for a world of hurt for the most part.
Yeah.
He's got a long way to go. I'd pick Pittsburgh in that game, but that 6.5-point line is pretty tempting. I don't know if they're that much better than the Bengals are right now. But the Bengals are a really bad football team. I wouldn't expect them to win more than one game. And one game you get for a fluke here and there, officiating mistakes, a royally beaten-up opponent like they're going to see on Sunday. Top to bottom, though, Pittsburgh's a better team. They'll probably win the game, but I think it's going to be competitive. That wouldn't surprise me.
And that is Neil Kulong, USA Today. Now he's put the fear into you. Now you're worried about Cincinnati because Neil has told you that it's going to be Mike Krusek in 1976.
Oh, he's driving me to drink. I don't think I've ever said that here on this show.
That's okay because I already knew that the staff meetings caused you to. All right.
Right.
Same thing with Lawrence. Like Lawrence,
right.
Oh, really. Lawrence, like, oh, no, a staff meeting. It's amazing how everybody used to look forward to them. What changed? All right.
Our guy. Drop of a dime.
All right. See, you're worried now.
Not what I wanted to hear from the real deal, Neil Kulong. Oh, no.
You are worried because in a 6-3 game, you're a Joe Mixon runaway from trouble.
I was correct. Worried yesterday when the news broke about Juju in the very same play, not only a concussion, but also dealing with a knee issue. It's like, that's not good. I'm not saying Juju is the be-all, end-all player. I think he still needs to do more to be a true bona fide number one wide receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, but he is your best receiver.
He is.
Okay,
yes. By far.
All right. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Here we are, 9 days until Thanksgiving. And tonight, Penn State Bucknell. This is actually part of the Brooklyn tournament that Penn State's in. Bucknell, in fact, will play Syracuse as part of the tournament Saturday at noon. Doug will be up in the Carrier Dome for that. Then Kevin will take care of the Bucknell football game as they hit the road to take on Fordham. So Kevin will be in the Bronx doing that game on Saturday while Doug's at the Carrier Dome doing basketball. Doug will be here tonight. Looking forward to seeing Doug, who does such a great job. In fact, Jason Horowitz and I were talking earlier today, and we were both praising Doug. So, Jason does a lot of stuff on BTN, Westwood, Sirius XM. Great to have you with us on the show today. We can't do this without you. Sean and I look forward to being around the audience as often as possible because you're an awesome audience who make very great and insightful comments. Guess who I got a chance to see for the first time in person on Saturday? Doug from Wellsboro.
Awesome.
Who, I mean, along with Noah. Noah, it was great to meet you too, buddy. Fun experience.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on the show today. Penn State Bucknell basketball coming up tonight in the Jordan Center. The 104th meeting between the two. I think, you know, based on the surface, there could be a few points scored in this one tonight. Bucknell, great pace up and down the floor. Penn State plays with great pace up and down the floor. Now, does that mean they hit all the shots? I don't know. It's one thing you never know. Every game, and I try to stress this so often to my class, I said, make no assumptions. I said, have keys going in. Keys are important. I said, but make no assumptions about the game. I said, sorry, the second you start making assumptions is when you get burned. I said, every game takes on its own personality. So that's what we'll see how it plays out tonight. Bucknell, this would be a huge win for Nathan Davis and Bucknell. Early in the season, you're trying to set up your Patriot League schedule. You're like, hey, this would be a great win, right? Penn State, got to keep it going. You're off to a 3-0 start. The Georgetown win did get you some national recognition, right? So now, you got to follow through. You have to keep winning. You have to look at every... I was talking to Jason Horowitz today. And you've heard Jason on Westwood many times. And you probably have heard him on Sirius XM. He's got a show at 3 every day. And he's doing the game on BTN tonight. And I said, Jason, I said, there's always this perception in college basketball that the regular season doesn't have relevance. That, you know, I said, and let's face it, for the Dukes, North Carolina, Kentuckys of the world, Kansas, Villanova, Michigan State, for the most part, that's true. They're so good, they can get through the schedule with enough wins where essentially they're playing for seeding. I said, where the regular season is relevant is for a program like Penn State. Penn State needs to put together something in the regular season where they need to win a game at Georgetown, but then can't, for the lack of a better term, stumble against Bucknell. I said, these games are all really important to Penn State. And of course, you know, and he agreed with that. And that's where this is, the game is for Penn State. For Bucknell, look, they've got the Patriot League. It's all about the Patriot League. That is the path to getting to the NCAA tournament. Get a great seed in the Patriot League tournament. Get as many home games as possible. Win it, get to the NCAAs. Now, these other games are important, too. But for Bucknell, yeah, it's a big game. You're playing Penn State 50 miles away. That is a great motivation. There's going to be a lot of Bucknell fans there tonight. For Penn State, though, you just beat Georgetown. You can't afford to stumble. You need to keep going. You need to beat Bucknell. You then need to beat Yale. Then when you get through that, boom, guess what? Then you get the tournament in Brooklyn. Now you got the other Power 5 schools you're playing. In fact, they'll play a series of Power 5 schools after the game with Yale. After the game with Yale, they got Ole Miss, then either Syracuse or Oklahoma State, then Wake Forest, then at Ohio State, then Maryland at home, then Alabama at home. They have a series of Power 5 games all right in a row. No break, no breather.
Yeah, so far for Bucknell, two losses, but only by a combined total of five points. And they shot close second half last Wednesday night, the last home game they had against Hofstra. They were pushing close to a 60% shooting from threes in the second half. So something to look out for tonight.
And they have Avi Toomer back. Toomer had 20 points and five boards against Canisius on Saturday night. There is your fulcrum right there. Heck of a player. The matchup of Toomer against Jamari Wheeler, who is, by the way, an elite defender. He might be, in person, the quickest basketball player I've seen on the college level in a long time.
One of the other Bucknell players that's really stood out to me, who's really turning into a good leader on the floor, is Jimmy Sotos.
Sotos is a good player. I think Meeks has been very good off the bench. No question. I think inside Newman's played pretty well. Bruce Moore's played pretty well. Now they're getting as much production off the bench as they are from the starters, to be frank with you. So this is, I think Nathan's got a good team. You know, watched them on tape. Good team. And they move. You know, it's Penn State's, you know, now Penn State's depth does come into play in a game like this. I know that Meeks comes off the bench. You know, Robertson started when Toomer wasn't playing. And a couple of young guys off the bench. So where Penn State's bench experience makes a difference. And also, it's also with Mike Watkins inside. No offense to what they've seen so far. They haven't seen an athlete like that in the middle. The key is, can Watkins stay out of foul trouble? Most teams, and I pointed this, I asked Pat a question about it in the pregame show. Most teams have tried, when they've had a qualified big man, to run plays early at Watkins with the idea of trying to get him into foul trouble early. In other words, let's just get rid of this guy. And against Georgetown, with your seven, they did it. And Watkins, instead of fouling, blocked two shots, and it changed everything for Georgetown.
So with Mike so far, health-wise, off and running, good to go so far?
Oh, yeah. In fact, he and I walked into the Jordan Center together this afternoon. Yeah. Along with Ross Condon, who's the director of basketball operations. Hey, Mike, how are you? Hi, Ross. Good to see you, Ross. Watkins laughing. But, yeah, and, of course, there's Lamar Stevens, who's a very difficult matchup for anybody in the Big Ten, let alone Bucknell. I didn't even mention Lamar. Myron Jones has been shooting the ball well, needs to keep doing that. Curtis Jones has had a couple of really good shooting games. Last game against Georgetown, he was okay. Penn State also had too many turnovers against Georgetown. And that's the problem with Bucknell. Bucknell against Canisius, their starters had 20 turnovers. Do you realize that? Bucknell's starters committed 20 turnovers Saturday night. Not the team, the starters. That's a big number. Wow. Obviously, that's one of the keys. You know, Nathan knew they had to work that out. I mean, he knew that going in. I think, yeah, I watched the tape. Bucknell's a good team. I like them. I really like them. You know, I watched the tape. I think one of the games I wanted to look at was Vermont. Yeah, Vermont's a good team, and you know, Bucknell fought them tooth and nail. So you're right. A lot of close games for them. So Doug will have the broadcast on Eagle 107 tonight. Penn State broadcast here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, 6:30 the tip-off, 6 o'clock the airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And then Saturday will be Penn State and Ohio State. Noon with a 10:30 airtime. between now and then.
We're going to have to take out a loan to take everybody to dinner. Can't cry.
You're nervous now about Sunday after your guy, Neil Coulong, just basically said it's going to be a 6-3 game.
It reminds me of a Steelers-Bengals game I went to. Actually, it was the final game they played each other in the old Three River Stadium in 2000. I think they had a combined, oh my God, something like 14, 16 punts. It was just brutal. I think the Steelers ended up, I think they did get over 20 and scored over 20 and got the win, but oh man. We're looking up too much all day.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But what have I been saying? First of all, I think the Steeler defense is very, very good. I really do. Offensively, they're not. That's why earlier in the year, who did you play that was a tough game? And I had a couple fans say to me, well, you know, they, you know, it's just, I hate how they play down to certain teams. And I said, I looked up, I said, excuse me, okay, you're not very good. You're not good enough to play down to anybody. That's who you are.
I was one of the people that said that.
I said, I don't think you seem to get it. You guys are not very good.
That's what I said going into the Dolphins game.
Play down to anybody? Au contraire, mon frère. You aren't good enough to play down to anybody. It's that is who you are. I think it's hard for Steeler fans to get a grasp of this, that you aren't that good.
Not used to this. There's a standard. The standard is the standard, as Mike Tomlin says.
And it's all circumstance. Nothing the Steelers did. Look, you know, they lost Bell. They're going to lose Bell. Look, Antonio Brown, in the end, as great a talent as he is still addition by subtraction. And, you know, kind of losing Ben Roethlisberger. Okay. Now you're going with a quarterback that is closer to Mike Kruzek as to how he plays, as opposed to Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's been like the consummate backup quarterback. And he really, over the years, Ryan Fitzpatrick really has been the definition of the backup quarterback who has to start sometimes. Right? Mason Rudolph's closer to Mike Kruzek. Without having Franco Harris and Rocky Blyer back there. It's just who it is. It's who you are.
And one name we haven't brought up is Stephon Tuitt. I mean, they've plunked in two or three or four different guys to make up for Tuitt there on the defensive line.
Yeah, it's a big loss.
A huge loss.
But I'll flip it over on that. I did preface this by saying I think the Steeler defense is really, really good.
Right.
I mean, Joe Hayden was a great pickup and a smart pickup last year. Micah Fitzpatrick, they dealt a number one to get him. Well, guess what? There is no number one pick they're going to be able to get that's going to be a better player than he is. All right, that's the bottom line. They're not going to be able to get a first-round pick that's better than Micah Fitzpatrick.
And a lot of people gave Kevin Colbert a lot of grief for that, for pulling the trigger. Well, it's paid off.
I
know you have.
I said right out of the gate, who are you going to draft that's better than him?
No, exactly.
Yeah, right. He moved up to get Devin Bush. I think that was a good move, too. There's a series of things they've done that I like that have been good moves. Just offensively, I mean, they're going to have to think long and hard in future drafts as to what to do. Now here's this story. Did you see the story that the former chief revenue officer of the Sacramento Kings, okay, has been charged and, I guess, evidently convicted of taking $13 million from the Kings? How about that? What a bizarre story that is.
Is Vlade Divac still an executive of that team?
I have no idea. But it's the guy's name is Jeff David, and they, people are wondering why'd he steal $13.4 million. Okie smoky. That is.
Yeah, because there's a pair of brothers that own that team, right?
What, the Malouf brothers?
Yes.
I'm trying to think if they still own the team or not. Because the Malouf brothers, who also, I think, own the Palms in in Las Vegas. It turned out that Jeff David purchased an $8 million home in Hermosa Beach, 20 miles southwest of Los Angeles. They asked Jeff how he found the money to buy it. He explained that he's part of an investor group. Well, they wanted to know who these investors happen to be. He volunteered that Golden One and Kaiser, two major sponsors of the Kings, are partners. And now, at this point, this is where they know that they're cornered. I mean, it's a very intriguing story that ESPN.com does a great job with. $13.2 million he stole.
Yeah, they won't know it's gone. Chump change.
Maybe in your life.
No.
I mean, now remember, the Kings were on the verge of moving to Seattle. Steve Ballmer, who bought the Clippers, almost got the Kings and moved them to Seattle. And that's when, in June of 2015, the Kings and the California Credit Union Golden One agreed to a 20-year, $110 million naming rights deal for the team's new arena to keep them in Sacramento. There are going to be 20 annual payments averaging $5.5
million. I wonder if Ballmer had that $2.1 billion just lying around, the money that he did actually use to buy the Clippers. He would have used that cash then to buy the Kings.
Of course he would have. Yeah. Well, believe me, he could do it. During the negotiations, Golden One CEO Donna Bland suggested that if the Kings needed more cash up front, Golden One could be in a position to accommodate. Jeff David filed that information away. They also signed a 10-year, $28 million sponsorship deal for the new training facility with Kaiser. Deals like this often have, quote, escalators. See, he took advantage of all of this. Boy, it's amazing. Wow. That's why, like, when you get to some of these positions that you're sitting in, like he is, and you're known as the chief financial officer, that's why, you know, a lot of really smart companies just make them interim spots.
Very
true. We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle's worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, let's get right to it with Chris from Shamokin Dam. Chris, I apologize for any weight you had.
That's fine. $13.6 million. Maybe he can get with Seth Curry and pay it off.
Exactly. That's right.
I wanted to comment on this past Saturday's game against Indiana and thank the season ticket holders in the university for the gift they gave all the veterans, myself included.
7,500 tickets. 7,500. And we salute, Chris, your service. We do what we do because of people like you.
Do any other universities follow Penn State's example?
Some do, Chris, and I will say this, that everybody else, when they do it, does a great job with it. But in talking to some of the people at Penn State, no one does it to the extent Penn State does.
Well, I think they do a great job, and I really appreciate it.
Well, believe me, we appreciate you and everybody else that has served. So it's really more the other way around. As much as you appreciate it, this is just a small token to let it, you know, the Chris's of the world, to let everybody know how much we appreciate you, the women and men that have served to keep us free.
Look forward to listening to you on radio tonight against Bucknell. I think that's going to be a competitive game.
Oh, I do too, Chris. Completely agree with you. I've watched Bucknell on tape. Let's face it, they play with great pace. They move it. And they, you know, Penn State's going to have to, quote, score in this game because Bucknell is going to score.
It was interesting last night watching Kentucky and Nate Sestina play with them. He got a lot more playing time than I thought he would. I think he's a good addition to show some on the floor leadership amongst a bunch of young kids.
It's interesting because I've been around John Calipari a lot during the course of my career, and I know John does value an older player and what an older player can be to be a rudder for the rest of the younger players. Nate Sestina absolutely fits that.
Thankful that the Pirates got a general manager who knows what he's doing.
So, yeah, they do have somebody. He's going to have to work around the budget, but he does know and knows how to evaluate talent. Chris, thank you so much. I know we have to hit the top of the hour here, but we appreciate you and the call very much.
Thank you.
Chris from Shamokin Dam. All right, tomorrow on the show, Kevin Reichert, publisher, BallparkDigest.com, on the Major League Baseball proposal on minor league baseball. Today's show has been brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Talk to you tomorrow here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Back with you at 6 o'clock from the Jordan Center as Penn State takes on Bucknell in basketball for the 104th time.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.